but the thing is missing. The practice is the practice, not able to do what to do.
Yes.
For all of us, this gap between knowledge and action is always there. Now, why is it there? Because our intelligence understands faster than our mind. The intelligence is like a mother. The mind is like a child. So, if the mother sees my child is sick, the mother goes take the child to a doctor. And the doctor, very great, the child has got this disease, you take this medicine, this is very complicated. It can become very complicated. So, morning, afternoon, evening, take this. And don't let this child take this. Now, when they tell this, the child, small child, will not understand. The mother understands. So, our intelligence is like the mother. So, when we hear the philosophy, when we hear wisdom, then please understand. But the mind is like a child who is restless. So, we have to understand that this is a child. To some extent, the mother tries to control the child. Sometimes the child insists too much, the mother may have to choose her battles. I mean, let the child do something. But the child is also growing up. And as long as the child grows up, the child will also become mature. So, we do want to control ourselves. But we don't have to define our bhakti in terms of our sense control. We focus in our bhakti, our focus on our bhakti is simply connecting with Krishna. So, our intelligence will always understand faster than the mind. And that's why there is this difference between knowledge and action. Because we are often impelled by our mind's feelings to act. So, what can we do? Firstly, don't be discouraged. It's just natural. It happens with everyone. At least we can be grateful that at least my intelligence is understood. So, we have the knowledge, we accepted the knowledge. And even if we can't do the regulative side of bhakti so well, we can focus on the affirmative side of bhakti. That means chant as much as possible, associate with devotees, study Bhagavad Gita. By these affirmative activities, we are strengthening ourselves. Our intelligence is becoming stronger and even the mind is becoming clearer. So sometimes the mother, the child has got a disease which requires a lot of restriction. And then the mother may also become a little sentimental. Oh no, I can't deprive my child of so many things. How will you do it? So like that, if our intelligence is not convinced, we may pander a little bit. But as we keep practicing bhakti, both the intelligence becomes stronger and the mind also becomes clearer. So as the mind starts becoming clearer, then the mind also stops proposing so forcefully. And as the intelligence becomes stronger, the intelligence becomes more and more equipped to resist. So, first principle is don't become disheartened. It's just a universal principle. The gap between knowledge and action. And as far as practical is concerned, we can try to create some practical barriers for ourselves. That means, if we find that they say, I tend to eat too much or I tend to sleep too much, then try to create some practical support system. As I said, if you sleep too much, then we have not just one alarm, but maybe have two alarms, or have somebody else tell somebody, they can wake us up. Try to create some practical support systems. See, for changing ourselves internally, external change is almost always necessary and almost never sufficient. So, if a person is a drunkard, if that person's house, say, is above a bar, they'll never be able to go. Every time they go to their house, their desire will come. The external change is necessary. But external change alone is not enough. Even if they take a house far away from a bar, if the internal change is not being made, they'll go find a bar somewhere and go there and do it. So, we want the internal change, but sometimes external change can be a very valuable support. So for example, as I said, whatever practically you can do to support our determination. Because when the desires come up, the desires come very forcefully, but they don't usually stay that forceful all the time. So if during the time the desire is forceful, if somehow we can tolerate, after the desire subsides. So the desire is up, it stays for some time, and if I get a strong desire to eat something, but that is not available, and I have to go somewhere, buy it and get it and eat it, or cook it and eat it, and I also know it's very fatty, it's not very good for me, and by the time I start cooking it, slowly what happens is my emptiness starts away. So it's you may have seen sometimes in movies, if a thief wants to come and rob a bank or something like that, or then the thief just comes and gives a blow on the head of the guard. The guard gets knocked off. And the thief is going inside and is trying to steal now. But if in that period the guard comes back, hey, what are you doing? The guard catches. So like that, sometimes when desire comes, desire just knocks our intelligence. It just becomes unconscious. It becomes paralyzed for some time. But if during that brief period when the intelligence has become paralyzed, at that time, we can resist the desire. If we don't have the facility to immediately indulge in the desire, then by the time we go to that object, get that object and enjoy it, what happens? During that period, the intelligence says, hey, I don't need to do this. So we can internally, we can be patient, just keep practicing bhakti, and externally try to create some barriers. Thirdly, we can try to find out some way in which we can internally direct our thoughts towards Krishna. If we find some way, all of us may find some way in which our thoughts move nicely towards Krishna. Some of us may like kirtans, some of us may like some quotes, some of us may like some pictures of the darshan of Krishna, some of us may like to hear from some devotee. So whatever it is, in Krishna Bhakti, we can easily absorb our consciousness in Krishna. We keep that readily accessible for us. So, keep it, if we have a beautiful picture of Krishna, which fills us with devotion, and keep that readily accessible. Whenever the mind gets agitated, just look at that. Because basically, how the desires allure us, by creating a sense of deprivation within us. If you don't do this, you are missing so much. How can you? This is so wonderful. This is so irresistible. How can you miss it? So desires allure us by creating a sense of deprivation. But if at that time we provide ourselves some source of spiritual satisfaction, it's nice. I'm feeling nice. I'm not feeling so deprived. Then the allure goes down. So by just being patient, by trying to create some barriers to protect ourselves, and by finding channels to direct our consciousness towards Krishna, we can gradually learn to increase our self-control.
So this voice which comes, is this the voice of mind or intelligence? How to differentiate? The voices come. So it is mind or intelligence? Sometimes.
What is the, how do we know which is the voice which comes from within? If it is generally towards short-term impulsive pleasures, it is the voice of the mind. If it is guiding us towards something which is in term, in harmony with the principles of morality and spirituality, is in harmony with scriptural knowledge, then we can say it is the voice of the intelligence. So yes, sometimes the inner voice can also guide us. Inner voice can also guide us. We are about to do something, something says, don't do it. That is inner voice guiding us. So we have to have an external parameter or external benchmark based on which we can evaluate where the inner voice is coming from.
Any more questions?